Let me shoot up. Do you want me to quickly get you another one?
Oh, it's working.
We are from Edinburgh, Hotel. We don't have time to rent, but we are here. We have got few apologies from our side. Honourable Made, but replaced by Honourable Matile. Welcome, Honourable Matile. Honourable Zoro, also an apology. Honourable Kanambi is sick. Honourable Makubera is in Zimbabwe. Honourable Onel will join us later. We've got some important delegates from the provinces. Welcome, delegate from Limpopo, delegate from Free State, and delegate from Gauteng. Always, thank you. We're welcome to support our committee. And I'm also welcome the officials from the Department of Education. And you are still flooding us with a lot of bills. We don't know how we're going to cope, but we are going to try if we have chance. But as members, we have that ability that we must finish the bills before the end of the term, if possible. I don't want to waste time. There is an agenda in front of us. The briefing by the Department of Environmental Affairs on the National Environmental Management Law, Second Amendment Bill, B13, 2012, National Assembly, Section 76. I'm not going to waste time. I'm going to give the EG or anyone from the officials. In fact, before I let you introduce ourselves, I'm sure it's so sorry for that. Maybe we don't know. I'm Honorable Sikan. Yes, sir.
Sorry, Jason. I see in your agenda the Environmental Management Law, Second Amendment Law, B13-2012.
Yes.
And here on this one it says 2013.
That's a typo in my book.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Before we start, please let me introduce ourselves. I'm Lorita Bukani, the chairperson of this committee from Eastern Cape. I'll start from my honourable members. Honourable Makata, can you introduce yourself?
I'm not really very much at from Kingston and a member of this committee.
Morning, Chen. Morning, everybody. My name is Daryl Worth. I'm a member of the Select Committee of the Upper House, and I'm from the Free State for a starter province.
No more Upper House.
Good morning, honorable members and staff. My name is Matthias Kukan, I'm the Secretary of the Agriculture and Rural Development of the Commission of Health and Community.
Morning, thank you. I'm Matila, representing Member Marvin in this particular committee. I also want to indicate, Chair, that because I'm sitting in the COPTA meeting, which is also sitting now, I'll be in and out of this meeting. I have to make sure that both these meetings work. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning. I'm SLA. I'm standing in for the chairperson of the portfolio committee from the Free State Legislature.
Vladimir Matele is my name, from the Limpopo Legislature. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee on economic development, environment and tourism. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Gauta Mokoro. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Good
morning. My name is Deshni Pule. I'm a content advisor.
What are everyone else about in the city?
Researcher for the committee.
morning I'm told and entitled to secretary to the chairperson.
Okay, and staff of parliament, PMC, everybody.
Good morning, I'm the service of all the assistant to the committee secretary.
PMC?
Good morning, I'm Pam from PMG.
Thank you, Chair and the honourable members. I'm not a former director general for the Department of Environment. On my right, I have BDG Isham Abaga, who is responsible for law in the department. Francis Crazy, which is a director responsible for enforcement. Ruth is a Shabalani, and it's the director responsible for law.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Phineas Malaga, the legal advisor from the Free State Legislature.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Advocate Mpumele, legal advisor from the legislature.
Good morning. I'm Owen Janssen, President and Cecilia is not herself.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Patience Mpalo and Sophie Levin of the Temple Malang.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Advocate Alam Seta. I'm from Mpumalanga Provincial League.
Okay. Thank you, Beth.
Good morning, Chair and Committee. My name is Vanessa Lesabe, Committee Administrator for Economic Development, Environment, Conservation and Tourism in the Northwest. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members and staff. My name is Stella Mhlana. I am the NCOP liaison officer for Eastern Cape.
Thank you. I want to see you now.
Okay. Come, Stella.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. I'm Khotsole Khwasel, the researcher from Northwest.
Morning, I'm Philip Mahova, Limpopo NCOP Liaison Services.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ayn Furyun, and I'm from a researcher at the Free State Legislature.
Request Linda Gani to take us through the presentation, but
the bill, as you may appreciate, was tabled in Parliament early this year in April, and we now have to go through the provincial consultation following this session today. So, Linda, quickly take the members to the presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, honourable chiefs and honourable members. To put you in the picture of what documents we have circulated, because we are going to use the same document at the provincial briefings and also at a provincial hearing. We have distributed the PowerPoint presentation, the bill itself with the memorandum of object. We have also included a text in the existing act to make it easier for the committee members to read. And we have provided you with a section by clause by clause table with explanations and a portion for comments. It's just to make the consultation during the process easier when we present the bill in the provinces. The National Environmental Laws Second Amendment Bill was part of the National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill that was introduced in 2012. On the 23rd of November 2011, the Cabinet approved the National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill 2011, and in January 2012, we tabled the National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill 2011 in Parliament, and then on 14th February 2012, we did a briefing to the Portfolio Committee. In August to September, there was the public hearing and the clause-by-clause discussion. And then on 19th September 2012, the Portfolio Committee decided to split the bill into the first and second amendment bill. On 6th October 2012, the Portfolio Committee agreed and recommended the first amendment bill to the National Assembly. In February to April 2013, and that first amendment bill was passed by this committee. It was also passed by the National Assembly. It has been attended to and signed by the President. It's published. It's currently an act and it's already in operation. February to April 2013, the second amendment bill, the Portfolio Committee did a clause-by-clause discussion. On 7 May 2013, the Portfolio Committee agreed and recommended the National Environmental Law Second Amendment Bill to the National Assembly. In June 2013, the National Assembly considered and adopted the National Environmental Law Second Amendment Bill as recommended by the Portfolio Committee. The purpose of the bill is to amend certain provisions in the National Environmental Management Act to close certain regulatory gaps. The definition of commencement has been amended because previously it was only measured for the commencement of activity, and we also want to make provision, for instance, where the activity that is listed in terms of Section 24 is also a plan, a policy, a program, or a strategy. The definition of environmental assessment practitioner has been amended, and it has been amended to also include officials responsible for the review of these instruments. It is important that the officials got the same qualifications, the same training and everything else than the environmental environmental assessment practitioner in the private practice, and that is the reason for the amendment. The definition of specific Environmental Management Act is now amended to include the Integrated Coastal Management Act, the Waste Act, and also the World Heritage Convention Act 1999. The Integrated Coastal Management Act and the Waste Act are, in terms of their own acts, CMAs, but the definition in NEMA did not include them, and just for the easy reading of the public, if they read the specific environmental Management Acting Commission in the International Environment still act, they will know that the Waste Act and the Integrated Transport Management Act is part of that. But the World Heritage Convention Act is now the first one that is listed. Section 11 of the Principal Act stipulates that every national department or province exercising a function involving the management of the environment or the exercising a function which may affect the environment and which are listed in Schedule 1 and 2 respectively must receive environmental management and environmental implementation plan within 1 year of the promulgation of the Act. That is the previous Act, the National Environmental Management Act. And then at intervals of not more than 4 years thereafter. But the government planning periods are in cycles of 5 years, and for that reason we have changed the 4 years to 5 years, and we clarified that the provincial department responsible for environment is responsible for the plan. Section 16A on the Environment Outlook Report is inserted to provide for the preparation and publication of 4 yearly environmental outlook reports by the national and provincial government, but the metropolitan and district municipalities can do it also prepare these plans, but for them it's voluntary, and the preparation, publication, and procedure, format, and content of the reports are determined by the minister. Currently, it is done. The environment outlook reports are prepared by the provinces or some provinces and the departments, but this is just to formalize the process and to make sure that there is uniformity in the preparation of these reports. Four is a new section, and that the new section that the A has been inserted, and it's inserted to promote and facilitate the mainstreaming of integrated environmental, sustainable, and sound management considerations into business processes, practice, technology, and decision making across the economy. And the minister may provide guidelines on the development, content, and use of voluntary and or organization-based instruments, consider such instruments, and she can either endorse it or she can approve it. For example, the retailers, if they want to develop a standard for themselves, for which the storage of fuel, in the manner in which the a fuel must be stored, then the minister can actually endorse or approve those guidelines or standards. And it's not meant to be used by the government as a regulatory tool, it's more that the industry can regulate itself and government do not necessarily need to step in. Section 24 currently promotes the environmental authorization as the environmental management instrument to ensure the integrated environmental management of activities, and Section 24 has now been amended to enable, as appropriate, the use of spatial tools, norms and standards, and environmental management instruments in decision making as an alternative to environmental authorization procedures. Currently, these environmental management instruments can be developed, but only you can only exclude in terms of the current act the requirement from environmental authorization if you have a normal standard and not if it's based on the other instruments. So we just open it a bit wider that the other environmental management instruments or spatial tools can be used then. Instead of necessarily to have to issue environmental authorization. Clause 5A and B provide the minister and the NEC with the legal mandate to identify those activities that may commence with and without an environmental authorization. And the minister may also now prohibit the granting of an environmental authorization in a particular geographical area if it is necessary to ensure the protection of the environment. The Minister of the MEC is also provided with the legal mandate to develop regulations and norms and standards laying down the procedure for the preparation, evaluation of spatial tools and the environmental management instruments. And those instruments can then also include criteria and conditions. In other words, a person can be, or a certain activities can be excluded from from obtaining an environmental authorization, but the spatial tool or the environmental management instrument will then contain the criteria and the conditions. The current section 24C2A and B has been redrafted to provide legal clarity as to when the minister will be the competent authority when an activity has implications for international environmental relations and commitments. This clause is currently in the Act, but the interpretation of it is not very clear, and we have amended it to provide legal clarity. Then there is also an amendment to provide clarity that any activity relating to a matter that has been declared a national priority by Cabinet, for example the renewable energy plan project, must be processed by the national department. But the process to be followed prior to the Cabinet decision is set out in the bill. So there will also be a consultation process prior to going to Cabinet, and thereafter this approval will be published in the Gazette. If in exceptional circumstances where the MEC either unreasonably or due to the capacity challenges fails to take a decision within the prescribed time frame, the Minister may take the decision. With the portfolio committee looked at this amendment, it was mindful of the powers of the provinces as set out in section 125(2)(b) and section 125(3) of the Constitution, which obliges the national department by legislation or other measures to develop the administrative capacity required for the effective exercise of the power and performance of the function. The Minister is also obliged to report annually to Parliament on the exercise of this power. There is a whole process set out in the Amendment Act before the Minister can actually step in and take the decision. Clause 7 amends Section 24E to provide clarity that the minimum condition that one of the minimum conditions of the environmental authorization must include the provision on the transfer of rights and obligation, and not only in the circumstances where there is a transfer of ownership. So we have just made this provision as required. Clause 8 is just consequential amendments because of the amendment of moving all the offences and penalties to one section or two sections in the Act. Clause 9 contains substantive amendments to section 24G to address the abuse of this section. The Minister of Environmental Affairs, the Minister of Mineral Resources, and the MEC responsible for environmental affairs are given substantive powers and can now issue directives for a number of reasons. The administrative fine has been increased from 1 million to 5 million. The requirements for the report to be compiled by the applicants have been tightened. And the amendments now make it very clear that criminal prosecution may still be instituted despite the fact that the person has applied for an environmental authorization in terms of Section 24G. The amendment also allows the Minister of Environmental Affairs, the Minister of Mineral Resources, or the MEC to defer the decision until such time that the criminal investigation has been concluded, and the amendment will also provide legal clarity on the applicability of Section 24G to the unlawful commencement of waste management activities under the National Environmental Management Waste Act. Articles 10A and B provide legal clarity on exemptions that are allowed or not allowed under the Act, and Clause 11 does control consequential amendments as a result of the amendments to Section 24. Clause 12, the environmental management inspectors are currently experiencing that before they can issue a Section 28 directive, they have to approve that the person on who has the duty of care to take reasonable steps in fact did not take the steps, or that it was not reasonable steps. And the maintenance now will be linked to duty of care requirements from the power to issue a directive. The amendments will make the issuing of the Section 28 directive easier. Clauses 13 and 14 introduce amendments that clarify the distinction between incidents as referred to in Section 30 of the Act and the emergency situation, which will be regulated in terms of Section 38. A number of the provinces actually requested that we amend the Act to provide the clarity for what is emergency situation, because it was previously addressed but not adequately addressed in terms of NEMA, and these sections make it now much clearer how to deal with emergency situations. So a person that acts in an emergency situation do not require any environmental authorization for the activities, the departments or the MEC will issue directives instead. Section 30 deals with the reporting and remediation of duties of a person responsible for a sudden, unexpected and uncontrolled release of a hazardous substance. The new Section 38 addresses the situation where a list of the specified activities are bound to be made in response to an emergency situation where the time frames do not allow for normal assessment and application for environmental authorization. So it previously wasn't clear whether a person should then continue with the 24G application or not, and it's all now very clear now, and the procedures are set out in the book. Clause 15 provides the environmental management inspector to search and seize any other mechanisms of the transport. Clause 16, 17, 18, 19 and 25 have been amended because all the offences and penalties were previously scattered throughout the Act, and is now they are now all combined in new sections 49A and B. Clauses 20 and 21, the provisions of the new section 39A and the amendment to section 44 are not entirely new, but they were previously contained in the repeal provisions of the Environment Conservation Act. The Minister has now the legal mandate to develop regulations for control products that may have a detrimental effect on the environment. The regulations may only be published after consultation with all Cabinet members whose areas of responsibility will be affected. An example of such regulations which we currently have are asbestos regulations. Clause 22 amends Section 47 to require the Minister or the MEC to table any regulations developed under the Act before the final publication to Parliament and the relevant provincial legislature respectively. This was amended on the request of the Portfolio Committee. Clause 23 amends Section 47D to allow for other methods of delivery of documents, faxing, email and ordinary mail. Clauses 26, 27 and 28 contain consequential amendments arising from substantive changes in the law. And that is it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional issues?
No, it says
what Honorable members, that is a bill table for us today. So I want to give the members the clarity, the questions. So I will hand over to the members to give the clarity to the department and to the questions. Honorable members, is there any questions? Clarity?
Let me start from Limpopo. Let me start from Honorable Makali.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a short question.
My question is referred to prohibition of certain products. That is the bullet number two. I want a clarity on the examples of this product that may have a detrimental effect on the product. If you may mention one or two, thank you very much.
Another two words?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Yes. Section 31J allows the environmental inspectors to search any vessel, vehicle, aircraft, or pet animal without a warrant on reasonable suspicion that it is used in the perpetration of contraventions listed in the section. This could be problematic unless the department provides clear guidelines under which environmental inspectors will be able to search and seize without warrants.
Another one.
Section 24 creates conditions under which the minister could or can be delegated with the powers of an authorizing authority to exempt applications from environmental authorizations when the action or the project is deemed to be of national or provincial importance and is aimed at preventing and mitigating serious harm to the environment or property. Some sections of society could be concerned about this level of power in terms of environmental management assigned to a single person. The bill does not clarify what projects may be considered to be of national and provincial importance, which may also create uncertainty. Thanks, Jim.
But 4A and B under environmental authorization, I would need to be clarified. We seem to be giving in this clause. We seem to be allowing, say, maybe provinces or whatever areas to use their discretion. The law now has been amended to enable, as appropriate, the use of special tools, norms, and standards. When the presentation was made, I seemed to hear that we now, as provinces, will be having some discretion of some sort. My concern here, Chair, my concern is as a unitary state, are we going to have a mechanism that makes sure we don't veer too much away from the overall direction the country wants to take? Do we have that mechanism? We appreciate the unique situations in provinces. We appreciate that. But do we have a mechanism to make sure we remain within the overall direction the country is taking? My next one is under environmental authorization. I would like to know whether these rights and obligations, as we're going down, devolving certain authorities, whether the budget will also follow. Are we not going to find ourselves faced with unfunded mandates? Thank you.
Thanks, Chef. My first question for clarity is on is under environmental authorization. This clause 6E. In the exceptional circumstances where the MEC either unreasonably or due to capacity challenges fails to take a decision within the prescribed time frame, the minister may take that decision. Does this imply that the minister would be monitoring as to who is able to take a decision or not, or would the MEC from time to time be informing the minister as to the progress towards taking decisions and so on? Because my understanding of this is that there has to be, or there will always be, somebody who will be watching as to whether decisions are being taken or not, so that in a case a decision is not being taken, then the minister intervenes. That's my first point here. The second one is on search and seizure without a warrant. Is this not going to be in conflict with what the practice of the law, that one? There must be an application for a search warrant before any action of taking searching an environment is taken. Or is this one going to supersede the law that is known, that there has to be a warrant of search before any action can be taken?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Mine is a concern. Concerned about environment and environmental issues. We are talking here in terms of this document in generalization. According to my observation and many other South Africans, there is a sector in our economy that actually spoils environment, and in many cases historically, it is just left like that. And here you don't even hear any specific mention directed in that direction, that is mining. And they are not only leaving dumps around, but they actually corrupt the land itself and the water. So, Chair, I would like in this instance, this committee must take a decision and redirect the department to consider that particular sector of our life in South Africa. And that is the mining. What are we seeing? What does the bill say about it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think it's a multiple questions, Chief. I will need some responses. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chief. The one example of a product that may be harmful to the environment is the asbestos regulations, where we prohibit the use of this product in terms of regulations, and that was done in terms of the Environment Conservation Act, it's currently under the Waste Act, but and then also plastic bags, but plastic bags specifically is not such a good example as asbestos, but there are also other products that could be harmful to the environment if you use it in products. So that is an example. The exemption application does not provide clarity. I will leave it maybe to France, maybe, to answer that question. Clause 5A and B
do we have a mechanism to provide direction to the country? If one look at clause 5 A and B in the bill itself, it seems that the minister or the MEC can only do it with concurrence with the minister, and the idea is to provide that, to make sure that this guidance and that we all act in the same manner across the provinces. So that is why we added the minister or the MEC in concurrence with the minister. The question on the unfunded mandate, I couldn't quite get the question on the unfunded. Okay. Then the environmental authorization, whether somebody is watching. If you read the section, then it can only happen if somebody applies to the minister. The minister often gets a request and says, "Minister, we have submitted our application to the provinces. We haven't got the response, and yet no environmental authorization has been issued, and it was sent to the relevant authorities on such and such a day." Then the Act prescribes the whole process that needs to be followed. So it can only happen on application. It's not as if the minister will now, of course, at the moment we report on the issue of environmental authorization, national and provincial government, but it's not as if the minister will now constantly watching the provinces. It's only on application that the minister can take the decision. The search and seizure, I will leave to my enforcement colleague. In relation to mining, there is a National Environmental Law Commission bill that deals specifically with the mining aspect for further alignment in relation to mining. You will remember that in 2008 we had two amendment acts, the National Environmental Management Amendment Act 2008 and the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Amendment Act 2008. And in terms of those legislation, in future, all environmental impact assessments, as far as it relates to mining, will be done in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. But the Minister of Mineral Resources will be the issuing authority for those environmental authorizations, but the Minister of Environmental Affairs will be then the appeal authority. Now, both acts are now in operation. The Mineral and Petroleum Resources Amendment Act has been brought into effect on 7 June 2008. And that within 18 months, after 18 months, then for 18 months the status quo will remain. But after the 18 months, then the Minister of Mineral Resources then have to consider the environmental authorizations in terms of the National Environmental Management Act, and our minister will be the appeal authority. So currently the Department of Mineral Resources do have an amendment bill in the portfolio of in the National Assembly. It has been tabled, and it's currently considered by the portfolio committee, and we have the National Environmental Laws Amendment Bill that then do further alignment, which is currently considered by the portfolio committee.
Morning, honourable chair members. Linda's dealt with the issue around the examples of products, so I'll deal with the issue around the searching of vessels. There were two queries in relation to that. It's just for members to note that the issue around search was already in the Act. We're now making provision for seizure of items if they're found. And just in terms of the concern, these provisions are aligned with the Criminal Procedure Act. So in other words, if
there is a reasonable suspicion in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, the police can search. For example, if they stop you at the roadblock, they're entitled to search your vehicle. If they do find something untoward in your vehicle, then this just allows them the ability to actually seize that. And it's also done in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. So once it's seized, it goes through the process in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. So if the police see something, they have to take it to their, I think it's called their OB book, and they've got a notice down there, it goes into police custody, etc., etc. So it's aligned with the Criminal Procedure Act and the SAPS provisions. I think in terms of the exemption application, there would be certain instances where the minister would be required, for example, there's another provision that also relates to instances where there's an emergency situation, that kind of thing as well. The Act makes reference also to instances where it's of national and international significance. So we envisaging those type of instances where the minister would have that ability. But I think Linda has already alluded to the fact that the idea here is not to create a minister who has all these powers without any checks and balances, shall we say. In terms of the minister's decision-making ability, in a lot of these instances, and the Honourable Member raised the issue around who will be watching and when will the minister be able to intervene and that kind of thing, the Act makes provision for cooperative governance to a large extent. So there's nothing or there's very little that the minister can do without actual consultation. I mean, apart from the fora that we have, the MINMEC, the MINTEC, where these issues are generally raised, and before the legislation, for example, is even brought to these committees, they're thrashed out at the official level at those fora. So I think in terms of that, I don't know if it addresses the concerns, but essentially it's not going to be a minister who has the power to sort of just do what either he or she. There will be specific instances, and in some instances, provinces actually do not have the capacity, and there is a request that, listen, we don't have this capacity, we'd like assistance. For example, in terms of something we did recently, where we supplied additional capacity for them to update their administrative issues around EIAs and statistics related to EIAs, because the province didn't specifically have that capacity. So what we envisage is that type of situation. Linda's already mentioned the issue around mining. So I think that as far as the remaining issue.
Thank you, Chair. Just to reinforce the response to the question by Honorable Madanza, we gave an Linda gave an example of our system also impact on the environment and the human health. In KZN, we also had a problem in the south of KZN of chlor chemicals, nutrient poisoning, which affected communities. So this is the type of prohibition that is applying for similar products. Just to also add on the exemption, both the minister and the provincial MEC, based on the importance of the activities as identified, the provision makes an ability for us to put in place guidelines on when would that be applicable. So in essence, it will not, as Isham was saying, not be willy-nilly. There will be an outline of exactly what are those activities as contemplated in Section 8. Secondly, we do have other special instruments beyond the EIA, like the Environmental Management Framework and the
strategic management, SEA, strategic environmental assessment, and those tools are provided for in law. So if you decide to go and work in a particular area and proactively at the province have that spatial information, in essence, you know what sensitivity in that area would pertain to the environment. And if there is limited sensitivity, therefore you can then follow a process of exemption. So it is well described in the next session of D and E of that amendment, section 5. It's 524. Then in respect to the mechanism to remain within the overall direction that you wanted to. Oh, okay. And then my last comment, which relates to the issue of obligations in respect of budget following functions, or in respect of what can be deemed as unfunded mandate. The environmental authorization and environmental impact management space is a concurrent responsibility. What we do at national is to put forth the framework and then establish norms and standards. But this is a provincial competence and also national competence in other aspects. So it's not a new function. We are just streamlining the system and improving on the current provision. So it would reduce administrative costs, in fact, because in some areas you may reduce the number of activities that require an extensive EIA process. And we do fund, in some instances, the environmental management framework, which provinces undertake, and in some instances, even municipalities. So there is an element of co-funding and support to the streamlining and the improvement of the system. And there has been a cry from both industry and even government in respect of how long the EIA takes. It is still a very important instrument to achieve sustainability, and therefore we will still have to perform the functions in terms of ensuring the environmental rights as outlined in the Constitution. So on that basis, I think I've dealt with the question. And then about monitoring the minister in respect of decision making, you were asking whether the minister would have a monitoring role and how that possibly would work. If an MEC is not taking decision within a specified time frame, currently our EIA regulation specifies time frame for decisions to be made by the authority. And there is therefore an expectation that we monitor our compliance with that. We currently have what Isham was referring to, a national environmental administrative system, which then provinces and national are capturing data in. So we are working towards automating the whole environmental impact assessment process through a project that we are undertaking now called the Integrated Environmental Management System. So at any point in time, we can have multiple decision makers in the process, and we can check the steps that authorization or that application is at. If you need a water license, it can happen concurrently with the environmental impact assessment. So it is a process of streamlining, and it will have the mechanism of monitoring, and we can then report whether it's to Parliament on our performance as the key authorities that are making the decision. So the minister would have that tool to monitor as much as the MEC would have that, use the same tool to monitor performance in the province. And in some aspects, there are departments that require national intervention and even developers when there is no progress by another authority. And in those instances, the minister would have a consultation process with the MEC to see whether the process of decision making can be expedited. Because again, national cannot make a decision without getting the information that was already processed by the court. So it is a practical process to facilitate interventions where there is a challenge, but also at the same time help to streamline the decision making. Thank you.
Thank you.
There is
a follow-up question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, when we speak about environment and environmental assessment impact, I think we should really be serious. We should not only mention it in passant. We should properly apply our mind. As I'm speaking now, it's now quite a number of decades that the asbestos mining has been stopped. But people are still dying because of the effects of asbestos, particularly in the Northern Cape and in Limpopo province. People are still dying. I talked about mining corrupting the land. And it is not only corrupting the land, it corrupts the water that threatens to flow into water that we drink today. And that is a very serious issue. Yes, explanation has been given that there is some piece of legislation somewhere which specifically deals with mining. Fine, I agree with that, but I think for issues of sustainability of the acts and laws as we go, something in this bill should have specifically have a clause that relates to today's thinking and the act that is existing, to relate it. And I think it should be the position of this committee chair to make recommendations to the department that this is the concern of this committee, that we feel there should have been a clause that relates to this thinking with the thinking of the past, so that we sustain that thinking and it keeps in the mind of the people. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you. I'm inclined to say he has stolen all the thunder. And we didn't sit here by design. That should be close to a Northern Cape, honorable member. But Chairperson, on the asbestos part of it, he has covered me. And the question still remains about the plight of those communities in those areas. Does this law somewhere, somehow, provide for that environment to be a good habitat for human beings? I'm referring specifically in my area. You know, the Mafefe. For sure, the Khoshi from Masese becomes irrational when it comes to this aspect here. But I think the laws of the country should be formulated in such a way that all its citizens are protected. Secondly, Chairperson, as I'm sitting here, I'm just wondering whether is there perhaps some gap in the laws of the country, which we do not see, you know, or we have filled up all the gaps, including the ones that you are filling through this amendment. You know, by the EESC demand, drainage is all the ills of the environment, the chopping of trees, the denuding of the environment, you know, seems to be going unabated. It even seems to be accelerating. I'm not sure whether it's because we don't have
sufficient legislation, or we're not implementing, we're not reinforcing, and things aren't getting better, Chairperson. Do we have gaps we don't see, or we are not very strong in implementing the laws that we have? It's worrying us. Thank you.
As soon as this bill is signed into law, there will be an implementation there. May I just find out as to whether or not the monitoring tool is already in existence? I'm raising this because there's something that you cannot run away from. There are other provinces that are not that normally do not toe the line, which would require that the minister might take action. I'm raising this because my concern is particularly on this point. MEC either unreasonably, I want to understand that one, unreasonably. So that's why my question is the monitoring tool already in there?
Mine, I think I'm most covered by the other honourable members, but I want to know, man, if this is it going to affect provinces? I'll talk about the issue of AMG, if it mentions, I'm from Caltech, you know, sometimes Chairperson, as provinces, you are unable to deal with matters. Though things are happening just at your doorstep, but you don't have power, because all powers are at the national level. So I want to get clarity if this bill is going to assist us. As promises to give us some power to deal with some of the issues. The issues, I will make an example, you remember the demo power stone. License was issued by the National Department. We didn't have any power as the province to deal with them. So if you can explain to me how is this thing going to assist us as promises to give us at least some power to deal with issues that are happening at our doorsteps and be able to remedy the situation. Presently, you can't do anything with AMC, you can't do anything with the thermal power issue. Even when you see people, you know, polluting water, you know exactly that it's not within your jurisdiction. So I want to get clarity as to how is this going to affect us. Because I can see here, even power is still more vested at the national than provinces.
Another
word?
Yeah, thanks,
Jay.
I wanted to carry on with Honorable Makora also when we started with this mining story. You know, as far as mining goes, the Mineral Affairs, they grant a license for a mine to be started with or without any environmental impact study being done, or the impact study only takes place years after the mine starts, without water licenses. And that's Water Affairs. I think I read somewhere there's at least 20 mines going without water licenses. They're just operating willy-nilly, they carry on. Now, I heard the one lady say that, yes, environmental effects. Now, we also have to extend this a little bit to one day when there's fracking or whatever's going to happen then. So we've got all sorts of things coming up there. Let's say, for argument's sake, I've heard the lady say there that environmental affairs will have the last appeal. The appeal. But what does that mean? Let's say, for argument's sake, mining, minerals, say, yes, we need job creation, restarting, we want to mine there. Mine where the minerals are. And environmental affairs then do the impact study and they say, no. This is what the problem is. The three departments have got to work in conjunction with one another. Now, what happens is, this is an appeal. Environmental affairs should be taking the lead on it. Say, no, you can't mine. Sorry, that's going to wreck the entire environment. Get the water case, there's not enough water, we have to build dams, it's going to pollute. What exactly means it has the last appeal? So you appeal against it, you say, no, it's going to affect the environment, mineral case, then we're carrying on. How are you going to see departments going to work in front of us? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a comment. If the minister is obliged to report to Parliament, Chairperson, I would recommend that the Parliament is going to be the Constitution does allow. He or she must also report to the Council of Provinces as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Honourable Member Makgoro raises some really crucial points and honourable work as well in relation to the mining issue. Asbestos is a major issue, and I think as a department we seriously agree with that statement. We've commissioned a study, in fact, and I'm speaking from memory here, so I stand under correction. It's Northern Cape, and DG does have a bit of background on it as well. I think it was Northern Cape and Limpopo specifically, but Northwest, sorry, and Limpopo and Mpumalanga, where we investigated the impact of asbestos on communities. For example, asbestos that's still found on roads, in school buildings, in cement that's been used to put up certain buildings. So for us, it's a serious issue. We've approached Cabinet twice already, also with a request for funding to actually start a remediation process. So Cabinet is aware of that issue, and for us also, it is a major issue. If it's any consolation, there's certain parastatals, and I think it was Transnet as well, that have done considerable work and invested a considerable amount of money in actually getting rid of some of the asbestos that they've had on their historical site. So I think in terms of the department and the issue around us, you know, using sustainability as the cornerstone of our mandate, I think there's a lot that's actually happening in that regard. The one issue that was in fact raised by Cabinet was the issue around how we're protecting our communities currently, and that's where the asbestos regulations also would come in. Honourable Madimi also raised the issue of the ills of our environment accelerating and the fact that we're not implementing. I'm sitting with my colleagues from compliance and enforcement, and we can pull out the statistics in terms of what we've actually done to make sure that things improve. For example, air quality, we've gotten industry to spend millions, literally, on improving their systems. We've prosecuted people. There's a whole range of things that we'd be very, very happy to share with this committee in terms of what we've done. The issue around that Honourable Matila raised around the monitoring tool and where an MEC acts unreasonably. I think if you read the provision, what the requirement is if there is no decision, then the first step would be to investigate why there is no decision. So unless we know the reason, we can't really fix the situation. So if it's, for example, as I mentioned earlier, a capacity issue, then we can say, okay, what capacity is required at the province, and we can maybe assist in actually providing that capacity so that a decision can be made. I think before we even go into the issue of the unreasonableness or anything, we need to know the facts around each and every situation specifically. So, as I said earlier, it's not a situation where, okay, the minister feels today, oh, I'm going to interfere in the Free State province today and then we're going to authorize this particular case. There's a process that's set out in terms of how this will happen. So, I hope that explains the issue. Then Honourable Sikakani raised the issues around AMD and the province's powers to deal with some of these issues. Remember that these powers are derived from the constitution because it's a concurrent function. It's national and provincial. So you already have the powers. But I think some of the issues that we're raising here is also for us to promote cooperative governance. I mean, if you look at the issue around norms and standards, and I mentioned already our fora that we used to deal with some of these issues, there's also provisions in the Act that allow for example, if an MEC has to take a decision, he or she can write to the minister and say, listen, this affects my province. I know, for example, renewable energy, and we've just done one recently where the particular MEC concern said, listen, this particular provision relates to my province. I'd like to be able to give authorization. And similarly, there's a provision for the minister to write to the NEC and say, listen, this thing has national importance, can we do the entire authorization? So it's that cooperative governance and also ensuring that these matters are dealt with comprehensively and as a unit type of situation. So there's not sort of fragmented, disjointed, because the industry and sometimes actually use that to their advantage in a sense, because if you apply here for this and apply here for that, the fragmentation, plays sometimes to their disadvantage, because one province might not be as capacitated as another or as national. So it has pros and cons, and you've got to think of those as well. Honorable Worth raised the issue around Department of Mineral Resources and the fact that they issue mining licenses. The issue there is that in relation to the environmental aspect, and I'm talking currently, there's certain activities that relate to a mine or mining activity that are listed under the EIA regulations, and it's those things that we have control over as national and provincial departments, but it's limited to that extent. The actual authorization of the mining license happens at BMR, and unfortunately, we have no direct control over that. So, in other words, if there's an appeal against, for example, a mine that started mining and then they haven't complied with the EIA regulations, for example, the minister will be the person that appeal will be sent to, and the minister will then decide on the environmental aspect and strictly within the mandate of the listed activities. The minister cannot, for example, say, or make a ruling in relation to the issuing of the mining license itself. Honorable Worth will remember there was a big issue around Coal of Africa and they're not being able to start their mining operations because the Department of Environmental Affairs, they haven't gotten an authorization, and remember that we then didn't allow them to continue with their mining because it was a road that led to the mine, if I recall correctly. So there are these provisions related to the listed activities associated with the mine. And then they obviously had to then rectify the situation in terms of Section 24G. And in those instances where it relates to specifically environmental issues, the Department of Environmental Affairs does in fact take the lead in those instances, and the minister is the appeal authority. And once the appeal has been decided, obviously then there's the judicial process thereafter. If the minister makes a decision, they can then take that decision on judicial review. So there's still that process. I think I have more or less in place.
Okay, just honorable members, to add on the responses, just to add on the issue of aspects of mining, the challenge at hand following the study that was undertaken in the aspect of aspects is contamination of the environment and also its impact on human health. Having undertaken the study in the Northern Cape, Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, we require huge investments. And I can't remember the figures offhand, but it's beyond 10 billion rand. And this is also, if I can contextualize the situation, bearing in mind that we have ownerless and derelict mines, the old mines, which were not, at the time of mining, there was no environmental law that made the requirement to comply with basic applications of treating and rehabilitating those mines. And those being ownerless, we still have the fiscal to invest in some aspects of rehabilitation, and also dealing with the acid mine drainage, because we're not talking about new mines. The Gauteng problem in the West Bantustan of acid mine drainage is basically from the old mine. And therefore that pollution is already something that we have to intervene more reactively than proactively. So we do have then the provisions here in terms of
identified activity, and acid mine drainage can be then covered in the activities that need licensing in terms of how you deal with it, because there's infrastructure that gets built and the treatment facility and so on. So there is a process of quick facilitation of environmental authorizations that is enabled in this amendment bill. Secondly, in respect to the aspects that relate to the degradation and demolition of the environment and trying to proactively manage in order to ensure that there is good habitat that would result in protecting the South African citizens. We do have provisions that are adequate in the various pieces of legislation. In the Waste Act Part 8, there is a provision to deal with contaminated land and how that should be undertaken. We were working on the regulations to then effect those provisions, because that act came into effect 2 years ago. And part one of that provision particularly did not come into effect because we've had a challenge with the banking sector, wherein, in essence, these provisions impact on the property development. We are saying in law, we expect then that even the banks would have to take the responsibility in respect of liability. And it does seem that from a practical point of view, we still have to further engage in negotiations with them in that regard. But there are provisions to manage rehabilitation and make sure that the environment both is proactively protected and also there are response measures. And we have wetlands rehabilitation program, which is supposed to restore the wetlands in order to then achieve the normal functioning of the system in a manner that would facilitate attenuation of river systems and prevent us spending lots of money in water treatment, because that water would be healthy to drink of the system if we do restore fully most of the wetlands and rivers. Just in the response, direct response to whether the minister already has a monitoring tool in existence. Yes, we do have what I said earlier on, the National Environmental Administrative System existing, but it was more voluntary, it was not forced or required legally that provinces must actually maintain and update that. So now, if by the provision that we are making here, the minister will have to then call for data and be able to access that information at any point in time. So I think we can improve following this provision, and also the regulations that we'll have to follow after the amendment bill should then be to tighten the measures of ensuring that the monitoring can be undertaken by the minister and also at times directly by the provinces themselves. In respect of the empowerment of the provinces in terms of what I would refer to as delegation, because provinces have power for the key concurrent areas, but water quality is a national exclusive competence, including hazardous waste management and so on. So we would have to then look at the requirement to delegate, and therefore the province is free to make those kinds of requests. But in normal instances, the delegation is not just given in law. There is a provision to delegate functions broadly, but the specifics would relate to the province requirements. So I think my response then to the honourable member is that the amendments do allow the exercise of the function both by the minister and the province, or anything where there is concurrent function.
But when it's not a concurrent responsibility, we then have to undertake the process of delegation, which then the issues of funds following function would then be also implicated, because you are having to build another capacity to manage a national competence. I think those are the issues. Okay, the cost for the rehabilitation for the in-situ rehabilitation in terms of asbestos, we're talking about 3,963,697 in terms of annual. So you have to do to have those annual costs for a 10-year period. And that cumulative then would amount to what? 10 times 3, about almost 30 billion. And this was information that was provided a year ago or so. So the figures might be adjusted, because we don't have the capacity as government to actually undertake that. And it's risky for us to use labor to actually treat, I mean, or even clean up the roads, because that would have a direct health impact on the individual that would be involved. So we need more technical solutions to deal with the situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we had a full amount of responses, but I will ask the department also to respond in writing, and then we must get this answers by tomorrow, because we need to send it to the provinces, because this is a Section 76, so we must have the questions from the and I also appeal our liaison officers with the IA that they must even pressurize the provinces,
yeah,
and know that the importance of the provinces to come here and listen to the first deliberations of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Section 76 bill. We need to do the public hearing. If the provinces are not here, or the representatives from the provinces, these are the hard times as the permanent delegates, because we need to go, we need to send the official to the provinces. But the deliberations are not the same, because we are all here, and then we... So I think it's very, very important, and we need to ask the provinces to take very serious about the briefings, and also thank the provinces that they usually come to the NSOP and listen to these bills. Very thankful to most of the Gauteng and the other provinces. I must sincere thank to them, because they usually come to us and listen. And when we go down, we don't have a tough time, because the chairperson or the member that are representing the chairperson also have the know-how of the bill. So I appeal to the liaison officers. We are going to have the briefing to the provinces. As a result, up to now, there are provinces that we don't know when are they having their briefings. We only have the Gauteng, that is next week, Limpopo next week, and the also Western Cape is today at 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get any provinces. Free State is also next week. So I don't know about the other provinces. I also appeal to the liaison officers to write a letter to them to say, no, we are very, very, want those responses to them. Because the others are quiet. We don't know whether they receive the bill or not. They are just all quiet. So thank you very much. I need these responses by tomorrow, and the staff will send it to the provinces. Let me thank again the delegates that are from the provinces. Thank you very much to come to this meeting. I think this is part one, end of the part one of our meeting. Thank you very much, DG and the staff. We have
I don't know what I just turned off before.
Chair,
19 years on, experience has taught us that it takes a community to raise a child. So, by the power vested in you, Chairperson, on our behalf, can you request the Office of the Honorable the Minister to sit in the same room with his colleagues in land and what is it, rural development, agriculture, and DMR? Can these honorable people sit together, get their act together? Because it's only through teamwork. It's only through teamwork. I sympathize with, are these the green scorpions? I sympathize with them. We are not saying they are not working. I'm just not convinced we are winning the battle. I'm not convinced. But if these ministers can, like we are doing here, sit in the same room and approach it from the same angle, listening to the answers here, a greater portion of our questions, the answers there too are lying in other departments.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think point taken. Thank you very much.
But now those both are all out there today.
Coming to the end of our meeting. Let's close the meeting officially. I thank you.